Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. Today, we are discussing UFC 290. It's a good card. We're going to do the main card because obviously we're busy people and the undercard is stacked. How many fights?
200 and something.
A lot of fights.
I think Sean Brady versus Della Maddalena just got canceled.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, that was going to be a good one.
That was going to be a good one.
So now 13 fights.
That's a main event of a fight night, though, really.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, we've got two sponsors for today's podcast, two awesome sponsors. Elion, who also sponsored the War Room. You'll notice we have a lovely selection of gloves, right? Are these in shot, Jamie? Can we see these? Yeah. They're in shot with the main one. You can appreciate. These are Veronica's. They're little tiny. They look like the gloves that you hang from your rearview mirror there.
Why do you always have to make fun of the size of my gloves?
It's just funny how small they are. I've got small hands. Like, I wear a UFC medium. Like, I have small hands.
I have extra small.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's women's extra small, which is like, you know,
that's,
like,
yeah,
like a pinky
small.
Ring. And then we've got these beautiful bright red ones, which I'm just moving these. Because, I mean, just look at them. I mean... In fact, I might just block myself out, and you can just look at those beautiful gloves for the whole show. Yeah, they're my lovely gloves. I'm always a bit reluctant to wear them because I like looking at them so much, and if I'm wearing them, I'm like, well, paying attention to the punch bag instead. Maybe I need to get a punch bag this color. Although they do have that bright yellow one, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, with the big smiley face. Oh, hang on a minute. Come on, you're going to show. By the way, the sponsor is Elion. ElionParis.com. Make sure you check out their stuff. It is just. It's just beautiful. Go on. Show us your fancy new gloves. We've been using these for the past couple of days. You've wanted these gloves for how long?
I love them so much. They're so cool. They're in the little smelly thing because I used them yesterday. Got to keep them fresh.
Got to put your glove socks in
them.
Look at
that. Oh, my goodness. Just look at this color. Just the color
amazing. The best thing, especially if you see how... angry Veronica gets at herself when she's training. What does it say on the inside of the glove?
Keep smiling.
She gets so angry all the time. I have to carefully choose the music we listen to. I have to make sure that the mood's right. Because if she starts getting angry, then she's going to start punching me a lot harder.
Yeah, that's why I had to get like the smiley.
Yeah, they are beautiful.
They're really cool. Oh, and those pads that we were using yesterday.
Yes,
those were nice.
They're in the gym. But they are very nice. Very nice. Lovely equipment. Thank you very much for supporting the channel. ElionParis.com. Make sure you go and check them out. They've got all kinds of collaborations and stuff going on. So, and we're not going to tell you any more about that. We're going to be involved in some of it. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So look out for their stuff. And Unbound Merino, of course, our friends here. You're wearing Unbound. You literally live in Unbound Merino now. Like every time, you just wear it all the time.
Because when you were using it, that was before they brought out the female line.
Yeah, and so you kept stealing mine.
Yeah, well, only like some stuff, and I had to be really secretive about it. It was mostly the beanie that let me steal.
You'll notice that the one I've got on is the very special customized full reptile one that says "Not for Ollie" on the back.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to get the rest of my stuff saying "Not for Veronica" on the back. But yeah, the women's line's out now. It's really nice.
Well, I got a few of the active shirts. And then especially since, you know, we were just in America and traveling and stuff, they are so cheap with the airlines.
Yeah.
Only a backpack. You don't even get a carry-on anymore.
You need clothes that you can wear more than once.
That's ridiculous. So we were able to fit like just so much of the clothes. And I would wear it for a training session, take it off, hang it up, and then be able to wear it again for another one.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Yeah.
Because I'd never had merino wool type of clothing before, ever.
Yeah.
So when I heard
that,
I was
different.
Like, what?
It's just a different level. Like, I was wearing it on the boat race. I was telling you guys, and it was, I was wearing it for like 3-4 days straight. And then I would take it off, you know, wash it in seawater with a bit of like whatever, you know, saltwater shampoo I had at the time. And then just hang it up, and it would be dry and ready to wear again in a couple of hours, and it would smell fresh, and like, it's amazing stuff. And Unbound is by far the best quality of merino I've ever seen, and it's ethically sourced, which is also very important, and they've been supporting us for a while. We've got a 10% discount for you guys as well, so make sure you get on that. If you use the code Outlawed on Unbound Merino's website before you check out, you'll get 10% off. You won't regret buying this stuff. It is top quality. And that is what the podcast is all about, especially with Elyon and Unbound, we're very fortunate to have really cool sponsors. we're very fortunate. Thank you very much for supporting us, and make sure you check them both out, because top quality stuff. If you need training equipment, if you need clothes that are just going to feel stylish and comfortable and wear very, very well, if you want some fancy smiley gloves.
I just feel like I should put my glove on the...
All right, fair enough.
So they could see mine.
Right in front of mine. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so today we're talking about UFC 290. We're going to talk about the main card, and it is a solid main card. I've got two different versions depending on what I'm looking at. Let me just pull up UFC
stats. Well, I went off Wikipedia because usually I go off Tapology, and then we do it before they change the order. And then
they change it to Wikipedia order.
Exactly. And the whole time we're doing the Pigs podcast, I'm going up and down the notes, confused. Sometimes I confuse them because they look similar, some of them. So, I don't know.
All got flat noses and too much scar tissue around their eyes.
That's what happened on the last Pigs podcast. With Sidon Felder.
Okay, so we're starting with Bo Nickel against Trishan Gore.
Yes.
Gore. Trishan. That's autocorrect. That's autocorrected me there, because when you search Jalen Turner, it autocorrects to Jawline Turner. Although that's a pretty good nickname.
That's good.
You're going to turn a few jawlines with a good left hook. Anyway, we're jumping ahead. So we're going to talk Bo Nickel. We're going to talk Trishan Gore. Of course, Bo Nickel, everyone's very excited about him and his potential. Undefeated in four fights, right?
Yes.
4-0 with one knockout, three submissions. 2-0 amateur as well with one knockout, one submission. He's a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is kind of unfair to associate as a blue belt, given the fact that he's a Division I wrestler. Very, very strong, good athlete, used to competing under you know, intense pressure with big lights and big crowds. And yeah, what do you reckon? I mean, Trishan Gore is...
I mean, I think they gave him this fight to win.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, Bo Nickel's for the amount of attention that he's gotten, what he brings, the amount of eyes and stuff, they want him to succeed. And I don't think they're as bothered if Gore wins or not.
No. Well, I mean, he had two losses, didn't he? He came into the UFC undefeated. He had two exhibition matches on The Ultimate Fighter, and then he got a loss to Brian Battle in his UFC debut.
Which was the tough final.
Yeah. And then... and then he lost by stoppage against Cody Brundage. And that, to be honest, was... I mean, of course, he's coming off a win over Josh Fremd, second-round guillotine. Mm-hmm. The Brundage fight was a little bit telling for me, though, because he was reacting very much to those level changes that Brundage kept hitting, and then he just came out of nowhere with that massive hook. I agree with you. I kind of feel like this one's been matched for Bo Nickel to pick up another win. I mean, 4-0 against 4-2. What are the UFC stats saying? Let me just pull them up. Like, I'm very excited for Bo Nickel, but it's like sometimes I feel like fighters join the UFC a little bit too soon, and then you can kind of tell that they're curating their career too much.
Yeah,
if that
I
makes
see what
sense.
You mean.
Like, I don't know. Where are we here?
What's good about Gore is that, I mean, he's explosive with his left hook. Mm-hmm. He throws a lot of calf kicks. He like splits overhand right to left hook. So he does have this ability to generate a lot of power that can be difficult for him.
Yeah.
And then versus Frem, we saw a new approach from him, which was him initiating in with the takedown, using more of his jab. Yeah, and kind of getting him to like double guard backwards sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that guillotine that he landed, he actually tried it against Battle. And, you know, Battle rolled to his back. And Frem did as well, but he did the right things adjusting to it, which he learned from the Battle fight. And then when Cody faced him, Cody was just like, I'm just going to wrestle him.
Yeah.
And that's it. And he ended up catching him, but it was kind of one of those like weird swing catches more than anything else. I think he was like blocking a calf kick,
yeah,
and then hit him on the return.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just see him evolving from fight to fight and picking up things from opponents and applying them. And then with Bo Nickel, what I found a bit strange is from that win with the arm triangle, I just felt the arm triangle was like it was really high, mm-hmm. if that made sense. And
is it jaw pressure, do you think?
Yeah, it's just he just had Pickett in that for like a minute.
Mm.
And Pickett wasn't doing anything to get out of it, if that makes sense. He was just there.
Just hanging on.
Yeah. And then he protested about a knee to the groin that happened like 2 minutes before. But it did initiate the takedown, supposedly. That knee just went from him like just powering him to the ground.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He did great things. Like he had the head and arm control, and then he stepped through when you're on all fours and you have your legs kind of dangling. So he used that to then get to the back. And mm-hmm. I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just thought the arm triangle wasn't really in a position, and maybe Pickett tapped because he was just like, well.
Just kind of, yeah.
I've been here long enough.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of expecting Bo Nickel to make the most of the pressure that Trishan Gore is going to probably put him under. It makes no sense for Trishan Gore to back up and give him any space because then he's going to get pushed around and Bo Nickel's going to set up his level change. But ultimately, I just think this fight's going to be on the floor in about within a minute, and Bo Nickel's going to be able to probably be able to beat him up from top position to soften him up and then attack some kind of neck attack.
Yeah.
You know, anaconda, arm triangle, you know, rear naked choke, et cetera, et cetera. I just feel like, yeah.
Especially with how easy Cody Brundage was able to get to his hips.
And the other thing as well is you've got to think Gore's coming off that guillotine win, which means that his first thought when Bo Nickel level changes might be to attack his neck as opposed to try and defend the takedown. Not that I think he's probably going to be able to defend the takedown anyway. So, I mean, whether that's a good decision or a bad decision, we'll see if it works. But do you know what I mean? It's like he might have that one shot at a guillotine. He might take it and then find himself on the floor, given his back as he's getting back to his feet.
Mm.
I mean, I'm going with Bo Nickel. I don't think that's any secret there.
Yeah, same.
Okay, next up, Dan Hooker against Jalen Turner. Dan Hooker just never gets easy fights, does he? For him. He never gets easy fights. So quick tale of the tape on this one. So Jalen Turner, 13 wins and 6 losses. Dan Hooker, 22 and 12. 3-inch height advantage for Jalen Turner at 6'3" as a lightweight and a 2-inch reach advantage. Now, Dan Hooker's usually the one that's taller and has the reach advantage, even though he doesn't tend to use it too much. He tends to put himself inside his opponent's punching range. I kind of feel like we might see a bit of a game plan adjustment here from Dan Hooker. I feel like he might watch the Gamrot fight and take a different approach.
You know what? I think Turner won that fight. Based on damage, yeah. And this is saying from somebody who's like a big Gamrot fan and he's like my friend and stuff, but just fight-wise, that fight was really close and I just feel like he just landed so much more damage, actual damage.
Yeah.
And if that's the scoring criteria and that's what we're going off, come on.
Yeah.
It could be like if the whole fight, let's say you have my back and you do nothing with it and I land one solid punch, that round, the solid punch is supposed to win.
Yeah.
Supposedly, according to the rules.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm just as you raise that point, I thought I'd have a quick look at the stats because it's interesting the way that the stats kind of paint the picture. If you look overall, Jalen Turner was winning on significant strikes, 40-29.
Yeah.
But then total strikes, Gamrot was winning 89-62. But then Gamrot also had 4 takedowns out of 12 attempts and nearly 7 minutes of control is what he's registered for. So I agree with what you're saying, but then what you got to look at is
how much of that control is up against the fence, though.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying that that's a statistic that is a worthy one, but I'm just saying that that's kind of what's registered on UFC stats.
Yeah.
But so Jalen Turner outstruck Gamrot with significant strikes every round, 12-9, 18-13, and 10-7. But then was out wrestled. He got taken down every round, twice in the first round and once in the second and third. I agree with what you're saying.
Like, but he did a great job at it. The thing is, the total strikes would always go more towards Gamrot, but not in the striking exchanges. It was because on the ground,
yeah,
it's different to go right hand or left hand straight into somebody than going,
yeah,
well, and getting like 30 punches.
That's where the difference is with significant and total strikes, though, because Gamrot's got the advantage of being able to have landed those strikes on the floor, but they go towards total strikes and not significant strikes, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. And I just Jalen feel Turner, like those.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Doesn't
I mean,
paint the picture of what actually happened. Because I first saw it and I was like, oh yeah, Mateos. And then I watched it again and I was like, maybe yeah. not.
Yeah. I don't think anybody like fights Jalen Turner and has an easy time of it, especially at lightweight at this point in his career. Like Dan Hooker, this is why I feel like Dan Hooker might switch up his game, because again, of course, he's coming off that win against Poirier, and against Poirier, like that was a smart game plan, but it also was a fight that suited Dan Hooker, because like he's tough, it's going to be difficult to make him tap unless something's really going to break.
Mm-hmm.
Poirier is very excitable when he's got a submission, and if he doesn't get it, he just kind of fall apart a little bit. And Hooker just played a very smart game, and once Poirier had broken, he kept his calm and was able to dismantle him using those front kicks to the body. I think he's against Jalen Turner. I feel like he might opt to do the smart thing again, but I think that'd be a different kind of game plan. I think we're going to see Dan Hooker try and grapple more in this one. I think he's going to try and take Jalen Turner down, because the thing is, like, Hooker's a tall guy but doesn't use his reach and his height advantage against most people. So when he's fighting someone that's taller, it's going to be even less prevalent.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I'm not saying that a shorter person can't outstrike a taller person. Like, you can watch. No.
I'm screwed.
For sure. No, because they can. It's like for example, my friend Stefan Struve, when he fought Volkov. Like Volkov was the guy that fought like the taller fighter there, even though Stefan Struve was the taller fighter. Like, I feel like being the taller fighter is sometimes a physiological thing. I won't say advantage, but it's also a choice. Like Dan Hooker doesn't choose to fight like a tall fighter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, it would make more sense for him to be right close up against Jalen Turner, to make it ugly, to really nullify the reach advantage. Fight in a range where Dan Hooker's more comfortable. Like if you look back at his fight against Paul Felder,
yeah,
right? I'm sure he had a height and reach advantage in that fight, yet he was inside the pocket all the time. I feel like that's the smart thing for him to do, and to use clinch work and head position and any kind of trips and any kind of grappling that he's been working on, which I assume that he has, because, you know, Izzy's been working on his grappling. You've got to think that there's some overspill in that camp, and they're all working on their wrestling and grappling. I think that might be a smart thing for Dan Hooker to do. And now he's got his confidence back because he's picked up a win. I mean, what was he on? A 4-fight losing streak. That's rough.
Yeah.
No, sorry. 2-2. He had the decision win over Hak Parast in between.
Yeah, but, so you know, they were initially scheduled to fight March 4th, but Dan Hooker broke his hand, and that's why Turner got Gamrot. And what was interesting is Anik during the broadcast said that Turner had said that he expected Hooker to want to wrestle him.
Mm, interesting.
So it goes to your point.
Interesting. I just think it's a smart thing for Hooker to do. And, you know, maybe now he's had, of course, a hand injury is not ideal, but, you know, he's had a bit more time. I think the game plan might have settled in a little bit more, especially after watching what Gamrot did, you know.
Yeah, like, but
I mean, Gamrot's got really good timing on his takedowns, and he's very good at hustling from one takedown attempt to the next to the next. And that's something I don't know as Dan Hooker can do. But what he could do is utilize his height in the clinch position, using his head position up against the fence and using trips and reeps.
And knees to the midsection.
And knees to the
lot.
Midsection.
I think hurting him to the midsection would be beneficial. But if you look at Jalen Turner, like the mounted guillotine he got on Brad Riddell, Jamie Mullarkey, I mean, these are great guys.
Tough guys. But, yeah. I mean, but Brad Riddell was hurt before he got tangled up in that guillotine.
Yeah, just the same as the rear naked choke wins. He like punches you and then you don't know where you are and he chokes you out. He goes around to your back because he's really tall.
Mm.
His limbs are, you know, they're there before his body is, sort of thing.
I think this is a tough fight. I really do. I could see Dan Hooker exhausting himself trying to take the fight to the floor and having a bit of success, but not enough success to win rounds. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm
kind of feeling like Jalen Turner might do it, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I can see knees. I can see him using knees up the center line. Because like Dan Hooker's got, he's got a very kind of in-your-face type of game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why he's taken so many of the shots that he has in recent fights. And I think Jalen Turner's going to play right on the outside and keep stinging him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make it more difficult for Dan Hooker to close distance. And then when he does, it's going to be... he's going to be reckless when he does it.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that Turner doesn't have to like fully rotate with his punches. Mm-hmm. He just like pops them out with his shoulder, just the way they are. Yeah. So you don't see them coming. they don't telegraph at all. And he can hurt you from really close distance.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm going for Turner.
Yeah, me too. Although I'm always excited to watch Dan Hooker fight because you always know it's going to be a bit of a mad one. Okay. Robert Whittaker against Dricus du Plessis. So, let's have a look at the stats, tail of the tape. What do you reckon on this one?
I've honestly been debating this in my head. Mostly because, you know, when you're on a test and you put C through too many times, and then you're like, oh, maybe it's the wrong answer.
Right.
I've picked against du Plessis too many times. And he keeps winning.
Yeah, but
I just can't pick
it. So like that's going to run Whittaker. Out though, right? That's, I can't either. Like, so tail of the tape, so 25-6, is that right? Because it's probably got a Ultimate Fighter.
24-6 on Tapology.
Yeah. And Dricus du Plessis, I've got 19-2 on UFC stats at the same. Yeah, okay. So 24-6 for Whittaker and 19-2 for Dricus. 1-inch height advantage, 3-inch reach advantage for Dricus du Plessis. Higher striking output, better striking accuracy, 50% takedown defense compared to 84% takedown defense for Whittaker, but better takedown accuracy for du Plessis. But then you've got to think who's Whittaker for and who's Dricus for. And I keep going back to the same thing. Robert Whittaker's like hopping sidekick to the knees.
Mm.
Like Dricus' knees already bend the wrong way a little bit. You know what I mean? Like when he's standing in his stance, his knees kind of bend inwards.
Yeah.
Which to me makes him look very unathletic when he's moving. And I
could
just
maybe
see,
it's that.
You know what I mean?
Why?
But that's part of the reason why he's awkward though. Right, one of the reasons why he wins, like if you look at his fights, like, I mean, especially his last couple, like Till and Brunson, like he'll take your best until you get tired, and then he'll get to you.
Yeah.
Right. But Whittaker's like a five round fighter against people like Yoel Romero, like.
And he looked good against Vittori.
He did look really good.
Yes.
Really well, really measured, and over three rounds, it's like. It must feel like a walk in the park for him after the fights that he's had. I just can't, like, I can imagine it happening, but I would be in shock still, right?
Yeah, that's a little bit how I feel because, I mean, it's not like Derek Brunson wasn't having his way with him, right? Darren Till was doing great against him. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Like Marcus Perez, before he got that knockout, he was just like piecing him up. But then, wham! He's almost like Derek Lewis-ing it.
Yeah.
It's just like,
bit.
How are you generating this much power? I don't understand.
He's able to maintain in fights where other people start to fall apart.
Yeah.
And like the thing is, I mean, like Till's good until he's not, and then like he was out of that fight. He'd been
going to. Being out of that fight before that fight, if that makes sense.
That's a better way of putting it.
He was already, as well as Derek Brunson.
Yeah. Brunson's good until he's, yeah. Yeah. They both have a breaking point that I don't see in Whittaker, I think is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Like Brunson was like tired and chins up and like, he looks uncomfortable when he's gassed and he's had enough. You know what I mean? Like he'll like try for 400 takedowns and like like 399 of them all fail, and he'll get one, and the person will scrabble back to his feet. Then he does that kind of back jog where he's got that like, oh shit, look on his face. Do you know what I mean? And whenever I see that, I'm like, oh no, like, it don't matter what color your hair is, that's you're cooked. Yeah. I don't know. I would be very surprised if I saw Drick as competitive from the beginning of this fight, right?
Yeah.
And I don't see Whittaker fading to the point where Drick finds his way into it.
Especially because versus Vettori, he just got better as the fight went on. Uh-huh. Like the first round was kind of close. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First round was kind of close, and then he just took over. The lead hand follow-ups, the kicks when he started using them were really great. Well, yeah. One thing Duplessis can do is attack his legs, because he does attack mm-hmm. his opponent's legs quite a lot.
Yeah. But this is the thing with Whittaker, because like, he stands heavy on his lead leg, which makes it vulnerable if you land on it. But it also puts him in a much better range to counter your low kicks, because he's kind of already leaning over his lead leg. So when you do go, he's gonna counter.
Yeah, trade you.
So I even feel like Whittaker wins the low kick game, especially if he's using that chasse kick, because Drickus's knee's gonna fold inwards. Like that's straight away my game plan. Yeah. It's a little bit like Jimmy Crute's legs do the same thing, right?
Yeah,
and you remember, Anthony Smith, that low kick that he caught him with, and his knee buckled inwards.
Yeah, right in that like nerve thing.
Yeah,
it was so weird.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. I'm also interested to see the reaction that Drickus gets when he walks out because of his rivalry that's brewing with Adesanya.
Yeah, I'm not gonna comment on that. I just think it's dumb.
but there's gonna be, you know what I mean? It's gonna be interesting to see how the crowd receive him.
Yeah, for sure. But like, we've had a lot of comments on the. Well, you've had a lot of comments. I just read them, asking for like Duplessis, like dark room and war room and stuff against Robert Whittaker. So there seems to be a lot of interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are interested in him because he is. I mean, he's beaten Till and Brunson. They're two good names to beat. But like, the characteristics of the fighters are different to Whittaker.
Yes.
If Duplessis catches Whittaker with something unorthodox, something unexpected, that's the way that I could see it finishing. Like Whittaker slips onto a head kick.
Yeah, like straight knockout.
Yeah, yeah. But aside from that, I see Whittaker taking control of the fight from the beginning and just not letting Duplessis in. And, you know, we know Whittaker can grapple now. We know he can wrestle. We've seen that in recent fights where he's, you know, scored clean takedowns and you know, solidified top position. Yeah. He's, how old is Whittaker? 32. like he's, you know, 24 and 6. He's 30 fights into his pro career, but he's already so experienced and decorated. Like he beat Brunson in 2016, first round. I remember commentating it because Brunson was just lunging at him. It was wild, and Whittaker was like moving away, like trying to deal with the pressure, like trying to find Brunson's chin as it was surging into range.
Yeah, I saw him fight Joel Romero live. That was crazy. So then when I saw he was on the Paris card and I was doing interviews, I was so excited. I was going to say hi. But I didn't get the chance to.
Yeah.
It sucked.
He's, you know, I mean, you even go back to the Ultimate Fighter finale. Brad Scott, 2012. Like, I mean, like that, he's been fighting a solid level for a long time. And he's always been competitive. He's always been consistent. Even when he's been injured, he's been in the picture, in the conversation.
But his only losses in middleweight have been to Izzy.
Yeah. I think this is a good step up for Drickus. And if he might surprise me, but I would be surprised if he beats Whittaker. I would be surprised.
And then if he beats him and he fights Izzy, I'm still not picking him. I'm sorry.
And then he beats Izzy and he calls out Pereira at middleweight and there's no way you're going to call.
I would just be the
and
most
And he beats Pereira and he calls out John Jones
thing.
And moves up to heavyweight.
I would just
three-weight
be
champion.
So confused. I would just sit in a corner just to like think.
Yeah.
I'd just be so confused.
Hey, look, you know, you've got to take lessons from wherever you can get them. There's something that Drickers is doing that's successful. It's working against high level MMA fighters, or the highest level that we've got to offer right now. And he's been doing well, 19-2. I just feel like this is kind of where, like, he's got.
I'm not saying I don't think he's good. I think he's really good.
Yeah.
Just not like top five good.
Well, he's not. He's number six. Is he number six? That's what he is on Tapology anyway. I don't know what UFC rankings are. They're fictional, aren't they?
They're whatever. Sells pay-per-views. Yeah.
What are the UFC pay-per-view rankings? No, hang on a minute. Where is he in the middleweight rankings?
I have no idea.
You can't have tied five. They've got Paulo Costa and Drickers both listed at number five. Marvin Vittori 4, Paulo Costa 5, Drickus du Plessis 5, and Sean Strickland number 7. What'd I tell you? Fictional stats. They've just taken a 6 out and replaced it with a 5. They're like,
this looks better.
Just rank them both 5. Just rank them both 5. In fact, they can just both fight at the same time. We'll just put them both in there against Robert Whittaker.
How did he even make the rankings? I'll still pick Whittaker
against du Plessis and Costa at the same time. Costa would be too busy. The easy way to beat Paulo Costa is just to prop up a mirror against one of the corner posts, and he'll just be feeding his OnlyFans all the way through it. You can deal with one fighter,
dude,
and then
have you seen the stuff he's put with, like, Pollyanna? He's taking, like, a selfie in the bed and, like, a picture of Pollyanna Viana in the back and, like, dreams and stuff.
It's quite funny. I wonder if it's actually him running his Instagram.
It's his Twitter that I found. Well, I found an Instagram that shares his Twitter, and it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. He is rather funny. Or rather, whoever it is that's doing it's funny. Anyway, back to the point. Who does Drickus against who do you match him up against in the top five that he beats? Does he beat Costa or Vittori? Does he beat Cannonier?
No, not after Cannonier or Vittori. I think he has a better shot at Vittori than Cannonier.
That's a good fight, him and Vittori. That would be a good fight. I just feel Whittaker's too calculated, too experienced in these kind of high level fights. Don't you?
Yeah, and he's found a way to, like, be calm with it.
Yeah.
Like, for him, it's not, the UFC, you know, I get the chance to my country and all this. Yeah. It's just like, okay, we're here for another fight. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show this for myself more than for everything about what the UFC is.
Yeah.
Like, he's over it.
For sure.
I don't know. That's what I just kind of feel off of him.
Mm. Okay. Co-main event?
Co-main event.
Brandon Moreno against Alejandro Pantoja. A rematch. So we have 22-6 with two draws for Brandon Moreno. Sorry, 21-6 with two draws for Brandon Moreno. 25-5 for Alejandro Pantoja. And just to refresh everybody's memory, Pantoja won the first one. It was a hell of a fight. Really impressive.
In the tough. The first time they fought, it was in the house.
Right.
Yeah. And Brandon Moreno was number 16, the seed thing. And Pantoja was number 1.
Yep.
And then that loss to Pantoja kicked him out of the house.
Yep. Yeah. And then they fought again.
Yes.
Fight night, Maya versus Usman.
In Chile.
And Moreno lost that one.
Yeah.
By unanimous decision. Gave a hell of a fight. Got his leg kicked to bits.
I think they should have got fight of the night.
Yeah, they should have got fight. What did get fight of the night for that one?
I did.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. Look at that. Look at that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was like, what? All right, I'll take the money.
Did you watch that fight?
Yeah, I know, right?
It was a hell of a fight. Like, Brandon Moreno just didn't look like the same kind of fighter that he is now, though.
No, like, even physically, he looks like a different fighter. Like, physically now, he's like, he's honed his own body. You know, like, he found a good conditioning, and now he kind of looks like he has all the pieces together. Mm-hmm. And the thing with like, Moreno, Yair, and Alexa, and all of that, like, they were just starting off when MMA wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They had to figure it out along the way for a lot of it. And they were fighters that people didn't give them the time of day because they didn't look like it, sort of thing. So I just feel like Brandon Moreno now is so different. So different as a person, as a... I mean, he's always been a great person. Mm-hmm. But I mean, more in the confidence in himself when he steps in there. Yeah. The calculation, the fact that he knows that he needs the win, that it's not just about... putting my heart on the line.
Yeah.
Like there's like, ways to
for
it.
For sure. Yeah. It was like that second fight against Figueiredo. There was a level of confidence that he got from the first fight. Even though the first one was a draw, you know, he came back in the second one and he was like, all right, I can do this now. And he's like, movement was different, more confident. And yeah. So then the first time he fought Pantoja was a rear naked choke in 2016. And then 2 years later, he fought Pantoja to a decision.
Yes.
So has Pantoja changed much, and has Moreno's improvements, has his improvements been enough to be better than Pantoja this time around, or has Pantoja improved at the same rate?
Yeah. So in the first fight, Brandon Moreno was like winning.
Mm-hmm.
He was winning until what I think happened was Pantoja hit him with an elbow and that dazed him. And then he all of a sudden was tired. It has seemed like when they fought, the shots that Pantoja lands has drained his energy as well.
Yeah.
It hasn't just been like, oh, that hurt. It's been like...
A bit like Figueiredo.
Exactly.
A bit like Figueiredo, like kind of drains his energy when he takes the big shots. And yeah, maybe.
That's kind of what I saw because he was doing, I mean, he was landing that lead hand and kind of like seeing everything, flying knees. It was a great round. And then it started in the second and it was just after that back elbow that Moreno just looked a bit dazed and just a bit like tired and out of it. And then Pantoja, he's beautiful, the level changed and he switched it, the angle. But it almost looked like he was surprised on how easy he got that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's because he really hurt him before that.
Mm. So do you think Pantoja's going to be able to take this fight to the floor if he chooses to? Because I feel like even though Pantoja might be more heavy-handed, especially now, Moreno's the more technical striker.
Mm-hmm.
Like his reliance on his jab and his ability to keep his elbow so tucked that it just kind of... Like, people just don't see it coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that kind of awkward rhythm that he's got, that he's embraced. I feel like he, as long as he keeps this fight standing, he's going to be able to pepper Pantoja and beat him up and win rounds that way. My concern is that although Pantoja might be quite chaotic with his takedowns, because he can be quite consistent in his attacks and trying to get to the back, even to the point where he'll climb up you. Like, even with that Askar Askarov, you know, when they were tangling up, there were moments, like, there was a beautiful back take. Was it the first round? Where, like there was an exchange and Askarov was coming out on top, and then Pantoja found his way underneath the back and took his back from it.
Yeah.
Like, they're the moments that I'm concerned that Moreno loses the fight. Because I still feel like even though Moreno's probably got better straight wrestling and better straight boxing, I feel like the kind of the wildness of Pantoja and his ability to kind of be in that wildness might... Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that
they might
sense.
Be the moments where he can expose Brandon Moreno and expose his back for just a second, and the next thing, oh, God, he got me. I was winning the fight all the way up until that point. Like, I was better than last time. I was more winning than last time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But he still was able to jump on
like
my back.
Kind of like an Izzy Alex Pereira type of situation.
But then, you know, that kind of came back around. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think Brandon Moreno's in far better condition now physically and mentally and technically to beat him.
Especially with all like the analyst job that he's doing. Yeah. He's watched, and you could tell also like the decision making that he has during the fight. Like, he fights the hands and he goes like for underhooks and does all these things that previously, like when he first fought him, it wasn't like that.
Mm.
If that makes sense. He was still doing the correct things, but not always the correct, like it took him a little bit to get to that decision. And I just feel like he's a completely different fighter right now. And mentally, and like the way he's focused, even from when he won the belt to now, I feel like it's different.
Yeah.
And he's handling it well. And I feel like Pantoja's going to come to rip his head off.
Yeah.
He's like, it's like my favorite villain fighting my favorite
Hera.
Yeah. I was going to say like Torquay.
McLovin.
Yeah. It's just like, why?
Yeah, like I totally hear you. I totally get you.
But Pento is just scary, man.
He is.
I was in the locker room when he fought Moreno, and I saw him doing those like arm grips and like just chaining things together, and I was like, ooh, Brandon's in for a tough one.
Yeah. He's got a real intensity to him, and I feel like that could be, I just feel like he can get to Moreno at some point. You know, this is three rounds, isn't it?
It's five rounds for the belt.
Oh, okay. So yeah, of course. Yeah, see that makes it a bit easier, I guess, for Moreno to pace himself in the first couple mm-hmm. of rounds. You know what I mean?
But, which is what he started to do against Figueiredo, which mm-hmm. is like on the last fight he got ahead and more and then landed that shot that stopped the fight. But
Moreno, yeah, Figueiredo kind of surges though. He attacks. What's that? He attacks until he's like, he starts to feel tired, and then he'll kind of take a bit of time off. And then he'll attack, you know what I mean? He allows himself to recharge and go again. Whereas Pantoja, I feel like he can work until he gets tired, but then it's when he gets kind of annoyed and a little emotional. They're the moments where he would struggle to recover the fight.
Yeah.
Right? Like Figueiredo for me always seems a little bit less like emotionally angry. Like he fights like he wants to hurt you, but there's a calmness to it as well. Do you know what I mean? Like after Moreno beat him, he was like, ah, yeah, you know, like, well done. He was happy for him in that moment. I could never, ever imagine Pantoja being happy for him. You know what I mean?
But his nickname's the cannibal.
Exactly.
But I feel like
it actually is. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the intensity between them is different. Like, Figueiredo is scary, but like, I don't know. There's like a peacefulness to his to yeah. that. Whereas Pantoja, there's like a fiery intensity, and I feel like that could potentially work against him if he spends the first two rounds walking onto Moreno's jab mm-hmm. and can't get close to his legs or his back. Mm. You know what I mean? And then from that point, he's gonna fight the rest of the fight, 25 minutes or however long's left, angry, and that can, in itself can be exhausting. Whereas Figueiredo, He'll burst until he's exhausted, and then he'll calm down a bit and he'll recover. And then he'll burst again when he's not exhausted anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like Pantoja, once he hits that red line, emotionally he's going to struggle to kind of bring himself back down so he feels fresh enough to regroup.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
If that makes sense. That's why I feel like over 15 minutes it'd be a better fight for Pantoja, because he can kind of foot on the gas more.
A little bit more.
Be more reckless. And,
but then when he fought Perez, it was five rounds, right? And then he just went on and...
First round, 1:30. No, it was a three-round fight.
Oh, it was a three-round fight. Yeah. Okay.
But I feel like this is different, given the fact that they know each other so well and the fact that Moreno's been champ now.
It might be like, you know, a Joe Benavidez, Henry Cejudo thing.
Maybe.
Where like, I've beat you before, but I didn't beat you for the belt. Like, where, you know, if you could switch the wins, you definitely have that one instead.
Yeah.
I am excited for the next one to fight Brandon Royval after this.
Yeah.
Because they both, like, Brandon Royval did good things against both of these mm-hmm. guys that put him in danger.
Yeah. He's on a 3-fight win streak as well since losing to Pantoja and Moreno.
Yeah.
And Bontorin, Schnell, and Mateus Nicolau as well. Mm. They're all.
Plus, he like blew.
Is
his...
he next in the rankings?
He should be. I mean, he blew his shoulder.
Albazi. We've got Moreno champ, Figueiredo number one, Pantoja number two, Albazi number three, and Royval number four.
That's messed up.
Don't tell you. At least they're not both ranked number three.
Nah, that's. I'm most excited about Brandon Royval fighting the winner of this.
Yeah.
That would be cool for next. But for this one...
Although that means you're assuming that this is going to be a foregone conclusion and we're going to go, yep, that was a clear win for such and such. Like, say, for example, if Pantoja is getting beaten up for the first two rounds and then was able to jump on Moreno's back,
yeah,
I would imagine we'll have a rematch.
I don't think we'll have a straight away rematch.
No,
because then it would be the fourth time, and we've already had Brandon Figueiredo four times. I mean, we need to stop having Brandon Moreno fight the same person.
Well, he needs to either beat them convincingly or, you know. Like, I'm just saying, I'm excited for Royville as well, but I'm just preparing your disappointment in case this is not a foregone conclusion.
Okay. No, I know, like, that's a possibility.
Like, the thing is, I before I even ask, I know you're picking Moreno to win. So what you've got to hope for really is a conclusive two rounds and a minute of him just kind of bap, defending takedowns until Pantoja starts getting kind of wild and reckless, and then either running him onto a knee or catching him with a clean punch and putting him down. Bang, bang, TKO finish. That's it. Moreno looked better than ever. There's no doubt he got subbed the first time they fought. He lost a decision the second time, but he was better. But this time he's so much better. He didn't even let Pantoja in. Technically and emotionally, he just dominated the fight. Right?
Yeah.
That's what you've got to hope for.
That's what I'm hoping for, yes.
Okay. I feel like Pantoja's going to beat him. And I don't like to say that because I'm a big fan
of
Brandon
so
Moreno.
Good on
Look,
the ground.
Team,
my goodness.
Team Lego all the way. I'm sorry. But I'm just, there's moments where I feel like Brandon Moreno can dominate the majority of this fight.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying.
But
yeah,
there's just moments where he's just going to get tangled up a little bit, or Pantoja is just, he's going to get caught with a couple of jabs and he's going to realize that it's annoying but not painful, and he's going to go wading through with big winging shots to the body. He's going to bring Moreno's arms down. He's going to crack him in the head and hurt him and jump on his back and choke him out. Like that's the way, if I keep putting him into the blender in my head, the fight blender.
Yeah.
Okay, let me put one scoop of Moreno, one scoop of Pantoja, and whiz it up and go, yeah, that's coming out Pantoja. And I go, one scoop of Moreno, one scoop of Pantoja, and whiz it up again. And I pour it into a glass. I'm like, yeah, it's coming out Pantoja again. That's just the way that my brain works. And I'm like, I keep weighing up the opportunities for each fighter and the way that they could potentially approach it. And I keep coming back to the same thing. Moreno's going to be better the majority of the fight, but Pantoja's just going to get to him at some point.
But that's the same as, like, we're saying, is he Alex Pereira? And then Izzy knocked him out.
Yeah. I'm not saying, look.
So,
okay, this was a conversation we were having the other day, I think, because this is, it changes. Every time someone fights somebody that they've already faced, it changes. Like, the odds of the fight happening the same way are completely different, mm-hmm. right? Like, and this is, okay, let's go off on a tangent. Let's have a theoretical MMA tangent.
We're only doing five fights.
Yeah, we'll bookmark this. You can have it. Because we're going to talk about Conor McGregor and Aldo, because that's my best example for this thing.
Okay.
What I'm realizing is that MMA fans feel like if something's happened in one fight, it's going to happen the same every time, right? McGregor fought Aldo the first time, knocked him out in 13 seconds, right? If McGregor fought Aldo again, for the first time ever, that first fight didn't happen, is a highly likely possibility that you might be able to catch him in the first sort of 15 seconds. Because no lessons will have been learned and nothing will have changed because the fight hasn't happened, right? Mm-hmm. But because the fight did happen, the circumstances going into a rematch would be completely different. Aldo would recognize his mistake. He would not get as emotional as next time. McGregor wouldn't be able to have to use the same shot because he would have to adapt, because Aldo would have adapted for it, right? So if McGregor and Aldo fought each other twice and it was both the first time, there's an equal chance of the 13-second knockout happening.
Mm-hmm.
If they fight once and then they rematch, the odds are different for the same thing happening. It's far less likely, right? So if they fought 10 times, most likely McGregor's only going to stop him in the first 13 seconds once. And every fight following that is going to be more difficult.
Yeah.
Right? Even probably to the point where Aldo maybe wins half of them out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with this. Right? Everything's different because this is not the first time they've met. They met in 2016. They met in 2018. Now they're meeting again in 2023. They're both different fighters, but they still have those memories of those previous fights. So there's a benefit in them having those previous experiences because they can make those changes.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure, we've seen Brandon Moreno make those changes. I don't know if Pantoja is any different to the person that he was back then. I just think he's maybe better at what he's already doing.
Yeah.
Right? He maybe have added a couple more skills to his game. He may have understood that if he pumps the brakes and holds himself back a little bit, he's going to have better success over the duration of a fight. And maybe, you know, if he doesn't force it so hard, he finds things come to him much easier because he's able to read the moment better, like he does against Perez and who was it he fought before Perez? Royval, of course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I mean, that was kind of an odd, like a bit of a random tangent. But the point is, if someone's fighting the same person again, the second time, you've got to take into account the lessons from the first time. Right. And I feel like Moreno did take in the lessons from the very first time they fought, lost by rear naked choke. But I still didn't feel like he was good enough to beat Pantoja the second time around overall.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
but now I feel
that.
Like he is. Now mm-hmm. I feel like he definitely is. But you've also got to remember that Pantoja still knows that he's able to get to his back and he's able to beat Moreno. And that confidence is going to allow him to flow through in positions where against other people, he might be doubtful that he's going to have that success, but against Moreno, he knows he's had that success, which will reinforce that.
Can't that sometimes work against you, though?
For sure, absolutely. And this is where I feel like Moreno's advances in his game and his maturity is going to really be a benefit to him.
Exactly. So he's winning.
But I still feel like Pantoja is going to get to his neck at some point.
He's just so sick on the ground. It is
so sick.
Ridiculous.
That
the
back
transition.
Take against Askarov was
oh my
lovely.
Goodness.
John Gooden was giddy in the on commentary. Oh! He spilled his tea all over his lap.
Oh, and like the transitions with Brandon Royval, I was watching it and I was like, I'm going to need to watch this in slow motion and take notes.
But see,
it's amazing.
See, that's a good example of someone that's a little bit better at riding the chaos than his opponent.
Yes.
Right? Like Pantoja, in his experience of, 30 fights compared to, what's Royval's record? Yeah, 15-6, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good chunk of fights difference there for Pantoja. You can see that he's a bit more aware of how to kind of manage that chaos and when to, like we were talking about the other day about driving a car around a racetrack, right?
Yeah.
If you're driving a V8 on a straight road, you put your foot down and hold onto that steering wheel best you can and keep it straight, right? As soon as you add curves into the track, you've got to then start knowing when to take your foot off the gas and when to touch the brake and when to accelerate. And I feel like the more people live within that kind of chaotic style, like Pantoja has, the better they are at kind of riding that chaos and knowing when to rev the engine and when to take the corner on two wheels. That makes sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Can't be telling everybody the things you coach me.
That's just common sense.
Okay. Now people know I don't have common sense. You gotta coach it to me. That's worse.
Yeah, but like the thing is, like, we see this all the time, don't we? Like, how often do you see fighters that they can't help but sit at the traffic lights and rev the engine when they just don't need to? And the car thing's a metaphor for a fighter's body, like a physical engine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are fighters that are so powerful that they can't contain that power, right? It's like they're just like when they decide they're going, they're like over their toes, you know? Like Cejudo is a good example of that adaptation. You remember that those two knockouts that I showed you? The one where he lunges forward and takes somebody off their feet is where he's wearing the gold shorts.
Yeah, I remember that one.
I don't know who it's against. And then he uses the same thing, but he's in and out the next time around.
More karate-like after he worked with Machida.
Exactly. Because he has an understanding of when to accelerate and when to brake and have that ability to put that front foot down to hit, stop, brake, and move back if he needs to. A lot of fighters just never develop that and they tend to run over themselves. Korean Zombie against Yair Rodriguez.
Mm.
You know, he ran over the top of Yair Rodriguez, did it three times. Third time Yair Rodriguez was able to put him on the end of that elbow.
Yeah, he did throw it a few times before he got it.
Yeah, and that was lovely to watch him just make those little adjustments. Little adjustment that goes back to what the other thing we were talking about, like being able to watch yourself in the moment and being able to go, hang on a minute, I was slightly off with that. I need to
Yeah, you only see that on super high level.
Super high level. Yeah. Izzy's one of the best examples. One of the best exhibitions of striking that we've seen in a long time in MMA is still him against Paulo Costa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm picking Moreno that's going to win.
And I'm picking Pantoja because I just feel like he's going to jump on his back at some point and strangle him. But I'm a big fan of both of these guys.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm a big fan of both of these guys. And I feel sad for picking Pantoja mainly because I have no idea what the stance of his Lego collection is, but I know Moreno has got a...
Man, Moreno speaks so highly of you as well. He's going to be sad.
Look,
he's always so complimentary of you.
I love him. He needs to know it's all love. He needs to know it's all love. And I'm only being objective, entirely objective. Whatever I do on these picks, like if I think Sean Strickland's going to win a fight, I'll tell you Sean Strickland's going to win the fight from my perspective. It's nothing about anything to do with these fighters. It's purely objective.
Yeah.
My concern is that Pantoja has the confidence of having two wins over him and he has the chaos as well as the experience to match it. And Moreno has grown so much since the last time they fought, but there are still moments in the fight where he can have his back exposed and they're the moments where I'm gonna panic for him and he's going to panic for himself because he'll have flashbacks.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Plus, that dude just needs like
a second.
Not even.
Just a whiff of
that shouldn't even be like.
Just a scent of a jugular near his neck, and he's like, yeah,
that's ridiculous.
He's very,
ridiculous.
Very good. We'll see. We'll see. I'll be pleasantly surprised if Moreno wins. I will. But I do feel like Pantoja might just be his kryptonite at the moment. And the thing is as well, like you look at the flyweights, you look at like, you know, Moreno, Pantoja, Figueiredo, and you can even throw Royval in there as well as like the one that's just outside of the pack. Like they're all as competitive with one another.
Yeah, that division is ridiculous.
Incredibly tight, tightly matched. Ridiculous. We'll see. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah, I think that one's a tough one to call. I really do. But I'm going with my instinct. You made me upset now because I feel like I've called against Brandon Moreno. He's going to be upset with me.
Yeah, next time I see him, I'm going to tell him.
I'll have to tell him. I'll have to buy him a new Lego set.
The last one he got him was cool, so he might forgive you, and now you're like on an even footing.
Maybe. Maybe we'll just return it. Okay. Main event. You excited for this one?
Yeah.
Alexander Volkanovski, the defending champion, against the challenger, the interim champion, Yair Rodriguez. I have done a full breakdown of this one, which is on the channel. It's up now, right? It's on the channel. Yep. And there's a BT Sport breakdown, which you can access anywhere in the world through a VPN. Yeah, make sure you check it out. Hang on a minute. Where are my stats? So we've got 25-2 for Alexander Volkanovski and Yair Rodriguez. It says 16-3. Is it 15-3 on?
15-3 on
Tapology. With one no contest. Same reach, both at 71 inches, but a 5-inch height advantage for Yair Rodriguez, which is mad.
Yeah. It's mad that they have the same reach.
Yeah. But Volkanovski's just, he's like SpongeBob, isn't he? He's just so broad. You know what I mean? He's got really wide shoulders. And he has got long arms as well. Like Yair Rodriguez, his height advantage is in his torso, mainly his legs.
Yeah.
And that's going to be problematic for Volkanovski if Yair Rodriguez gets into a flow with his legs. Mm. In fact, I'm going to pull up my notes for the breakdown show because... So how you see the first round going? Who wins the first round?
I'm not sure if Yair... I just feel like it depends on how Yair comes out. Like if he comes out throwing a lot of like kicks to sort of stifle, because Makhachev used the kick to the body really well.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I feel like if he changes his stance and goes to southpaw a lot, then that would be really good for him. He just has to be careful of the step through of Volkanovski, especially when he's going back, because he sometimes does like, you know, the really cool lean
and then,
away.
And then dips forward.
Yeah, and yeah. That's the part where I can see some danger from Volkanovski, because he can come from like down up with his strikes mm-hmm. and hit him as he's dipping forward, mm-hmm. or when he's going back sometimes, because he's so tall, he thinks he's out of range. And those step throughs, the amount of distance Volkanovski covers is ridiculous.
Yeah,
ridiculous. He's just like a bullet straight through. I'm not too sure how Yair is going to approach it. I think Volkanovski is going to wrestle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he just, you know, if he just prepped for fighting Makhachev, he's been wrestling a lot. Because mm-hmm. what else are you going to do? Like, whether it's defensively or offensively, sometimes if you only work on defense, you can do it offensively because you understand the backwards mechanics of it.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're going to see a lot of wrestling from Volkanovski. And I don't know if it's in the first round or second, third, mm-hmm. more. But another thing that was cool, I totally went off topic, but another thing that was cool, I'm so excited, was when Max Holloway was using that pushing post against Yair. Mm-hmm. So when he was throwing kicks, he was off balancing him by like doing that thing, which they do in Muay Thai a lot for knees and mm-hmm. another thing, your opponent's coming. So yeah, I just think Volkanovski's overall sturdiness. Yeah, he's a little bit like how Josh Emmett looks, but is. You know, like Josh Emmett looks like he's really like tough, but I feel like he gets really injured a lot and he's a little bit so low in fat that he's like on the verge of breaking all the time.
Yeah.
But Volkanovski looks like that and is 10 times worse than what he looks.
You can imagine him sprinting down a rugby pitch like a pinball, just kind of bouncing. Yeah. Ding, ding. yeah, I agree. I think his physicality is going to be a problem for Yair Rodriguez if the fight starts going in Volkanovski's favor. I kind of feel like the first round is going to be a battle of low kicks, because Volkanovski's really good at taking apart a lead leg, but at the same time, he can be made vulnerable with low kicks and slowed down. And I feel like Rodriguez has got, he used good kicks against Korean Zombie. But if you go back to Charles Rosa, he was using really good like hop side kicks, oblique kicks. And I feel like if he can time Volkanovski with those, he's going to be able to really slow him down. And then, you know, you start getting someone reacting to low kicks and then they become available for, you know, body kicks and head kicks. And I think the longer Yair Rodriguez can keep it in a kicking range, the more it's going to benefit him. Like, keep Volkanovski on the outside as much as possible, because, you know, even though the reach is the same, the length of Rodriguez's legs could be really useful in making Volkanovski stuck on the outside, like making him, you know, fight from the outside and come through danger.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing with Yair Rodriguez as well is that he's got good options for when people close range. He doesn't mind getting hit, which is not necessarily a good thing, but it does, a bit like Korean Zombie, it allows him to have the confidence to stay in range to try and strike. So like the moments where Volkanovski starts traveling forward and throwing big shots and stepping through, they're the moments where Yair Rodriguez can, definitely start lunging away like he does sometimes, but he can also stand his ground and start countering. And I feel like that might be a smart thing for Rodriguez to do as well. Like, keep Volkanovski on the outside, moving away from kicks, and then when he moves through range, stand your ground and just kind of deal with what's coming. Because it's a bit like Mike Swick. When I fought Mike Swick, one thing I recognized about his game is that as he sprints forward, people move away and he becomes more powerful as he's moving forward, because he's gathering momentum at the same time. And because Volkanovski is so good at moving forward but taking his feet with him, his successive punches are always going to be more powerful than the first ones he throws.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I would rather keep him on the outside, but when he moves through that range, try and stand my ground as much as possible. Like, use clinch work, use elbows, use knees, use footwork to turn, but don't give too much ground when Volkanovski's crashing forward. Because, I mean, worst case scenario, he doesn't get to you, but your back's against the fence and then he's level changed. And he wants to wrestle people up against the fence. That's where he's going to be strongest.
Mm.
So it's like, a lot of it really comes down to the decision-making of Rodriguez. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you could write down the ideal game plan, then play it like a video game and stick to it, then he's definitely got the skills to beat Volkanovski. But it's making the decisions in those moments where he's under pressure, whether he does the right thing or the wrong thing. And if he does the wrong thing, he's going to move back, he's going to give ground, he's going to get hit, and he's going to get taken down. If he does the right thing, he's going to be able to intercept Volkanovski and hurt him on the way in.
I feel like the issue with Volkanovski is, let's say you have a 10-question test, right, over a time where you're, like, relaxed to answer the questions, then maybe you can get a good percentage right. But this is like a pop quiz every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Volkanovski's like, bam, 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 bam. And you just get to the point where you're just like, oh my God, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. Just get away from me.
For sure.
And I feel like that's the thing. Like, Volkanovski's fighting and he's looking up at the clock, not to see how much time's left in the round, but to see how much time left he has to punch you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, how much time? Oh, I only have 3 minutes to punch you to death. You know? And everybody else is like, oh my God, 3 more minutes. I'm so tired. Yeah. Like, after Makhachev, he was like, party. Like, how does he have energy? And I bet Yair is going to feel so small in comparison to wrestling Islam.
You would imagine. You would imagine. But then Rodriguez is a big fighter. You know, I could see Rodriguez, you know, moving up to lightweight at some point in the future. You know, he is a big fighter. 5'11 for featherweight is big.
Yeah, he has developed physically more. Just like how Brandon Moreno has developed more physically. He has also throughout his career.
I wonder if there'll be any effect on Volkanovski having gone up and fought at lightweight and now having to come back down and make featherweight again. I wonder how much he cuts, because I would imagine he would have had to cut some weight to make 155.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
But I don't think much though. Plus, with how disciplined he is.
Yeah, and activity makes a big difference, doesn't it? Yeah, activity makes a big difference.
I mean, he looks like he's always on the go to do something. Mm. And even the resting activity he does, like with his kids, it like throws him in the pool, goes in, you know, like everything is constantly active. So I don't feel like he had much. Obviously, I'd have no idea how much he cuts or anything, but
I just wonder if because he ventured up to lightweight for a training camp and he was like, oh, I don't have to cut this time. If you like, you know. Even if he gained 3 more, 4 more pounds than he would have done
had
in
before,
training camp,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether he'll have to lose it to get back down. And it's 145 because it's the championships. Mm-hmm. There's no pound allowance. Yeah.
Yeah. I really feel like he's going to try and wrestle because he's had Craig Jones for a while and, you know, been training with him and stuff. And Craig Jones actually was in the UFC Fight Pass Invitational.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I saw a picture with him and, you know, like clearly he's been working on a lot of grappling and he showed great, just great defense, great hips, great awareness against Makhachev. And, and Yair does have sick grappling, but it's a lot like his striking. It's not like blocks.
Yeah. It's not systemized. It's random and opportunistic.
Like up kicks, crazy elbows,
yeah.
Inverted triangles into a leg lock to a butterfly sweep or something.
Yeah.
And Volkanovski's just like, no.
Yeah. Like you go back to like Volkanovski's earlier fights against, was it Kennedy? And
Jeremy Kennedy, right?
Yeah, Jeremy Kennedy and the Japanese kid he fought. Was it his debut? Kasuya. Like he was ground and pounding without doing jiu-jitsu. It's one of the things I talk about in the breakdown show where like he's really good at like
the triangle pressure.
Yeah, he's really good at anti-grappling. He's not like he never allows himself to get drawn into a grappling match. It's always post and punch and post and like spreads his weight over them without giving them anything that they can pull him into. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he doesn't allow them to like really wrap up and control his leg in half guard. He keeps it kind of straight and posted. And anytime they're trying to pull him in with an underhook, he's posting on their face and just getting himself out of there.
Yeah.
He's really good at like recognizing how to just nullify someone like reaching for you from the bottom. And like, you know, if you go back to Yair against Emmett where he finished him with a triangle, that was a part of the reason why he was able to set that triangle up was because Josh Emmett was already pretty cooked by that point anyway.
Mm.
He'd been hit with body shots and elbows and he got caught with a flying knee on the way down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the other thing as well that I don't think Volkanovski would do is when Yair was posting on Josh Emmett's head and he was hitting him and elbowing him, you could see Emmett like trying to get into his guard and bury his head to stay out of the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Volkanovski would just pull back and control his heels. So it's not like he's going to be pushing himself into submissions that will make it easier for Yaya from the bottom. You know what I mean? Like, I can see him, if he takes Rodriguez down, I think it's going to be up against the fence, but kind of in like a floating half guard top position,
mm-hmm.
and not letting Rodriguez pull him in. Yeah.
He just looks hard to submit.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever tried to, have you rolled with that, the Ankos coach?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He tried just to go for a leg lock. He's just like, it. Yeah. It's like your whole body just trying to move this like one can't limb as hard as you can. Yeah. And he's just straight like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's how I feel like trying to get a choke. I feel like if Volkanovski just went like this and went like, choke me. And I tried as hard as I can. No, he would just, you know, like,
yeah, just neck muscles.
Yeah, neck muscle it out.
Neck muscle defense. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think the thing that's going to win this fight for Yair, if he's going to do it, is going to be something nicely set up, but would seem quite random.
Yeah, like Volkanovski running into
something. Yeah.
That's when Makhachev caught him. Like when he went to the body and he overswung, he went back and he caught him with that left hand.
Yeah.
So something like that went in the clinch or with like an elbow or something.
Yeah. I could. There's one. So you can go back to the Charles Rosa fight, and it was, I think, the second fancy kick he threw. He went spinning kick and caught him across the face, and then he went switch high kick.
Mm.
And he did the same thing against Andre Feely. And so say if Yair starts off well and he starts working that lead leg of Volkanovski and he's hurting him and he's hit it a couple of times, he could go low kick to high kick and catch him when he's reacting to the low kick. I could see him doing that because it worked against Rosa. It worked against Andre Feely, stopped him with that. And then if you watch his fight against Korean Zombie, he did low kick, fake low kick stomp to the midsection.
Yeah.
So like he knows how to combine low kicks with upper body attacks. And I can see him catching Volkanovski with something like that, especially if he started out with having some success with the low kicks.
Yeah, the issue is kicks take a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And Volkanovski is like the unlimited resource of energy.
Yeah, for sure. But you've got to pull the trigger at some point. Like, it wouldn't be smart for Yair Rodriguez to think he's going to outwork Volkanovski. That'd be a horrible game plan.
Yeah. And I feel like versus Max Holloway, how are you going to put Yair Max Holloway in the apex, first of all?
Yeah, it was kind of... Did you see what Kevin Lee was saying about it? He's rather disappointed as well.
What did he say?
He just didn't like the idea of fighting in the apex in front of 200 super-duper rich people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it, but you've got to remember, you know, from like the UFC's perspective, like dealing with like casinos and arenas and the expense of loading in.
Yeah, they save a lot of money.
Loads of money.
Crazy amounts. You're going to watch it anyway. So, yeah. You
and
don't have to worry about ticket sales. You have to worry about nothing.
You can sell one sofa to Mark Zuckerberg for the same as you could sell half of the arena out if you were at the MGM or the... It's, you know, it's basic economics. Like, that's, yeah.
That's just, that's disrespectful to Yair and his style. You don't have a style like that. You don't put it in the apex.
Hey, if you're paying enough, I'll fight anywhere. I don't care where it is. It doesn't matter. I'm not bothered whether anybody's watching.
Money.
Yeah, but yeah, you know.
We do it for the show.
Yeah, well, this one's, where's this one? T-Mobile.
Well, you don't fight like that and not do it for the show. Come on.
No.
Both of them. And Alexander Volkanovski walking down from Thunder Down Under or yeah. whatever the song
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
he's
was
gotta
awesome.
You've got to use some AC/DC. I mean, you know, how would you not if you...
No, with the Land Down Under.
Men at Work. That's what you came out to, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so who was it that came out to AC/DC then? There was someone that walked out to AC/DC there because they're an Australian band.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't remember who everybody walked out to.
That's a great song though.
Yeah.
Men at Work, Land Down Under. Although I always kind of feel like whenever the UFC's over in Australia and it's like. Second fight's just about to start. We're waiting for the fighters to walk out. And it's like 6:45 in the morning. And all of a sudden they start playing like, who you coming from, Elenda? And I'm like, straight away, I'm like, do these people really want to listen to this song?
Yeah, but like, that's the same to British Sweet Caroline, though.
Yeah.
And anytime you put Sweet Caroline on, doesn't matter the time, the place, British people will sing.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
every
I suppose.
Time. It's amazing. Yeah.
I just wonder if like they're like, oh God, come on. Like pick a different song. Like we know, yeah, okay, we're in Australia. We know. We're in Australia. I just wonder whether anybody in there's like it is a good song.
All right, which way are you going? I'm gonna go Volkanovski.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's so bad because I like Yair, but
yeah. I think Volkanovski.
I think if I merged both of them, they would create my favorite fighter.
Is that right? Yeah.
With Charles Oliveira.
Yeah. Alexander Rodriguez or Yair Volkanovski.
DuBronx.
That's a different fighter. Hang on a minute.
No, yeah. Now the three together.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Alexander DuBronx Rodriguez.
Okay. See, I'm going for Volkanovski. I think Volkanovski's going to do it. But I'm, again, I'm up for being surprised. I think Volkanovski's going to do it. Just overall, I think he's a better version of himself right now.
Mm.
And I think that's why he's going to win.
Yeah.
But the improvements I'm seeing with Yair Rodriguez give me a lot of hope for him.
I just wish he fought a little bit more often. And then I feel like I would pick him more, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because after Max Holloway, it was after a 2-year layoff, you know? And then the whole problem with whether he fights Zabir or not. And, you know, like there's just been so much pressure on this kid. It's ridiculous. Because he was the first Mexican that was supposed to be champion. It wasn't supposed to be Brandon Moreno. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And he's had that pressure on him since the very first fight. And
he's only 30 still. You know what I mean? He's still got time.
No, and I know he's got time. And I feel like now he's honed better into himself personally, if that makes sense. His training and everything. So I think right now is the best version yet of him.
Yeah.
But
I just think Volkanovski's he's kind of arrived at his best.
Yes.
And I think we're going to see slight improvements in his game, but I only think it's going to make him like a bit like GSP when he got to the stage where he defended his belt a couple of times. You know what I mean? It was like you knew what he was going to do and you knew how he was going to do it, but there was very little you could do to stop him because he was so good. Mm. And you just can't deal with everything. You know what I mean? You can't deal with his Superman jab as well as his level change. And once his level change, you go, okay, well, I'll deal with this single leg. And then he switches to a knee tap and then you defend that and he's driving through on a double and you're like, oh, you're always trying to keep up with someone that is running the same program. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
they got it down to the T.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Fine line.
It's so well rehearsed and he's been active and, you know, I think he's going to take a lot of confidence from that fight against Makhachev, even though it was a loss on his record.
I feel like if they fought again, Volkanovski wins.
You reckon?
I think Volkanovski knows that.
Mm.
After the fight, he was like, I could have won that.
Yeah. But then is that problematic, him going back down to featherweight to fight Rodriguez? In his head, is it a foregone conclusion that he's going to win?
I think he's too disciplined to do something stupid like that.
I think so as well. I think so as well.
That's one of the most admirable features of Volkanovski for me is his discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you know he's going to be the first one in the gym. You know people are going to train because he's training so hard they're going to feel bad and mm-hmm. they look like wimps.
Yeah.
About anything. Like can you imagine being in a mat with Volkanovski?
Yeah. We got rounds, bro. We go.
Exactly. Like, what are you? You gonna take a break?
We go, bro.
I just don't see that of him. I don't see fame getting into the head. I don't even see him getting like phased by the fact that he's so famous.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like, for example, with Brandon Moreno, he's taken on the whole Mexican.
Yeah.
Everything on his shoulders and you can feel that and he's like because it's so much. So
it's kind of the same as Yair is.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like when he fought Jeremy Stephens in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Like there was just it was just such a tense environment because he felt like the pressure was on his shoulders and his family were there and then of course it was ended in an eye poke, was it? I can't remember how far into it was. It was only a few seconds in there, wasn't it? Like first round, like accidental eye poke. Yeah, 15 seconds in. And you could see how angry he was and frustrated with it. And yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And then with Volkanovski, he was fighting in, you know, in his home country.
Mm-hmm.
And just because he was fighting Makhachev and doing good, the crowd was going crazy for him. Like everybody was like cheering. The crowd wasn't like, oh, our fighter's losing.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, get up.
Keep punching him in the face while he's on your back. That'll do it.
Like they were just so excited for him. Like he was so different.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that's also why he's able to carry this reign differently.
Yeah.
Because the people around him that are so, they're just so uplifting.
Yeah.
And not waiting for him to make a mistake to tell him that he sucks.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with that crowd.
I'd be interested to know, like if you went around and interviewed all the fighters, like all the people that have won a championship, like, okay, what did you buy when you won the championship? You go around and be like, oh, I bought a car and I bought this and I bought blah, blah, blah. And he's like, he'll have like bought like a barbecue or something. Do you know what I mean? Like he's that kind of person. Yeah. Oh, he's bought a barbecue and then I bought like a new jet wash for the, he's a bit like DJ, a bit like Demetrius Johnson in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, so you know, like Saturday night, I'm defending my world title for the 8th time. Sunday morning, I've got to jet wash the garden fence. You know what I mean? He's like that kind of person.
Yeah.
And like, oh, before we leave for training camp, don't forget to empty the pool. And you know what I mean? He's like, I agree with you. I think he's totally kind of, in that like he's found his vibe, he's found his time, and he's certainly found his style.
Mm. I think people surrounding him also respect that when they see him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he must be a pain in the ass in the gym though, because I bet he outworks everybody.
Yeah, no, it would be horrible. Yeah. Like you're going in, especially like bad sleep or something, you know, you're having an off day, you're getting beat up by everybody.
Hey, you know what would be a good training session to watch? Would be Volkanovski training with Matt Serra. That'd be a really interesting one. Given the fact that they're both around the same height, Matt Serra was like, he was like,
you'd confuse him.
Yeah, for sure. Matt Serra was made out of springs when he was grappling competitively. Like, I bet there's some really cool stuff that Matt Serra could show him that would be useful for him. That'd be an interesting collaboration to see. Anyway, shall we wrap it there?
Yes.
We've talked about all the fights, haven't we? We're both going with Pantoja, yeah? We both
No, I'm going with Brandon.
Okay, you're going with Brandon.
And I'm really sorry, Yair. I want you to win.
But you don't think he's going to. Well, at least that offsets my guilt for feeling bad about
Yeah,
Brandon
but
Moreno.
I feel equally, you know? Well, not as equally bad.
Not equally.
No, Brandon Moreno is just like more up there as, you know, one of those like great people that you never want to say anything bad about.
Right, okay. I can't help but be objective, though. I'm afraid that I just see, like, Pantoja's just...
Well, I'm trying really hard to...
You're being very objective with the main event, because I totally thought you were going to pick Yair Rodriguez by some kind of spinning, jumping Mortal Kombat head kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
I'm going to go... I don't know what time the fight is. Just... If you go to another room, you just need to let me watch it.
You can watch it.
Okay.
I'll sit and watch it with you. It's usually because it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and,
yeah,
you know,
and
I've got grown-up
I'll be
stuff
excited.
To do now. Okay, right. Thank you to us. I got three cameras. I'm never sure which one to look at. Thank you very much to our sponsors. Make sure you check out Unbound Merino. Fantastic stuff. If you use the code OUTLAWED, you'll get 10% off and you will not regret buying that stuff. And same thing goes with Elion. Check out Elion Paris. Check out elionparis.com and you'll notice my wonderful, beautiful red, white and blue gloves on there, as well as Veronica's smiley face gloves, which remind her to keep smiling when she's getting angry at me during training. So thank you, Elion, for getting her a pair of those gloves.
Do you think his trash talking went away? Do you think he's not able to do that now?
Got to keep people on their toes. Got to keep people on their toes.
People, me.
You. Got to keep you on. It's for your own benefit.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So much love.
Thanks for watching. Make sure you like and subscribe. You always forget to say that. Although we're getting better at it now, aren't we?
No, we're not. We're just not equally as bad as the last time. Actually, worse, because we said that before.
Yeah, that's true.
We said thank you to our sponsors. Now it's after.
Well, we got there in the end.
All right.
All right. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the fights, and we'll see you next time.